Today I am at the Walter Kerr Theatre on Broadway in New York, interviewing Anthony Chisholm, who is currently starring here in the ninth play in August Wilson's long series. It's called Gem of the Ocean. And Anthony, welcome to Theatre Voice. Thank you very much for agreeing to do the interview. First of all, do you want to tell me a little bit about your experience working with August Wilson? Because you've done many of his plays.
Yes, well, I first met August in the fall of 1990. No, I take that back. It was January of 1990 when I auditioned for the fifth play in his canon. It was called Two Trains Running. So I met him along with the director who I had studied with years ago, the great Lloyd Richards. Some call him the godfather of world theater. Well, they were there together, and I did the audition and met him. And then when they finally hired me, we started the rehearsal for Two Trains Running up at Yale University, where our director was the dean. And we were rehearsing up there, and I happened to be a smoker, and August was too at the time. And so we'd take our smoke breaks outside together. And small talk emerged, and we found out we were, excuse me, fight fans, boxing fans. So we had a common thread of conversation that we could share outside the theater. When we completed our rehearsal period at Yale, we were up there for a few weeks. We had 4 days off before we had to reconvene in Boston, which was our first place of performance at the Huntington Theater. Well, I was headed back to New York City for those 4 days on the train, going through the lobby of the hotel, when August spotted me, waved. He was having breakfast and asked me where was I going. I told him. He said, well, you can ride with me. I have a car outside. Come join me for breakfast. And so I did, and we rode back from New Haven, Connecticut to New York City in the back of that car, and we shared a good deal of conversation. We found out we had several things in common, and we're 2 years apart in age. We both lost our mothers in that two-year period. Myself in 81 and his in 83. Grew up in sister cities. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. He grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They're not that far apart, and they're kind of rival cities in sports. But anyway, I enjoyed that ride back to New York City. I've been working in his plays ever since, along with other things I do, film and television and other plays. I've had the pleasure of working in his pieces, 35 productions of 5 different plays of his that I have done. I've done 5 of the 9 that he's written. 3 of them were brought into New York, Two Trains Running in 92, right here at this theater, the Walter Kerr. Then I did Jitney, and we started that in Pittsburgh and took it through 17 cities, including the Royal National Theater on the South Bank, where we won the Olivier Award.
And well-deserved, if I may say so. I saw that performance.
Oh, thank you. It was an enjoyable experience. Being there for my second time. As I had mentioned to you earlier, I played the Royal Court Theater, Sloan Square, 85, with the Vietnam play Tracers. But both of my working experiences in London have been incredible. I love the city. It's an international city. It's full of great intrigue, much intrigue, adventure, and depth. I love London. Yes, I've worked with August here now 14 years off and on. When we worked on Jitney, we started that in 96. During that time, of rehearsal. August one day took me on a five-hour walking tour, just he and I alone, through the Hill District of Pittsburgh. That was something I'll never forget. I met many, many of his friends and acquaintances from his childhood days. He showed me where he grew up. We climbed, went through a couple of alleys and over a couple of back fences. He took me down to the Five Points area where he went and had his hair cut at a barber shop with an old barber. He looked like he was 90 years old, that used to cut his hair when he was a kid. I sat there, read a magazine, and waited. I went up to Eddie's restaurant. It was a short order. It's a soul food restaurant, kind of a greasy spoon type, but exquisite food, you know, salmon croquettes and candied yams and greens and all these other kind of things. August worked there as a short order cook. Eddie, the owner, still there, said he fired him because he wasn't doing any cooking. He was sitting in the booth writing all the time. And he told him to take that writing and get the hell out of here. And August laughed and said, "That's his claim to fame. That's his claim to fame. That's his claim to fame. That's his claim to fame." But it was an interesting little restaurant. It had pictures of old great musicians, the Billy Ecksteins, who came out of Pittsburgh, and a few other notable performers.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about Gem of the Ocean, which, though it's the ninth play in the series, it really underpins the whole series because it's set in 1904, right at the very start.
Yes. Gem of the Ocean is an incredible play. They're saying it's the deepest of his nine in the canon thus far. It's the first decade of the 20th century, 1904. And as we're aware of the fact that each of August's plays is set in a different decade of the 20th century. But they weren't written and produced chronologically. But they're out there now, and each one is like a child in a precious family. Who can you love the most? You love them all. Jim is very special. Other than Jitney, haven't had much of an experience where people have stood up like they did for almost 1,000 performances over 6 years with Jitney. Every performance, they've been standing up every performance for Gem of the Ocean, tears in their eyes, and it moves us to see them moved, and it all comes out of the source of August Wilson. Gem of the Ocean, set in 1904 in the same neighborhood. It's always about the same neighborhood of Pittsburgh, the Hill District. Centers around a woman who is a bit of a saint, a sage, a healer, a mystic. Her name is Aunt Esther, and she is mentioned in several other of August's plays. She is a woman, if you have a troubled soul concerning anything in your life, she's the woman to see. She has a process that she'll take you through and cleanse and heal that soul. She's said to be 300 years old. In actuality, she carries 300 years of African-American history that was handed down to her when she was a protege to a previous Aunt Esther. And she, in turn, will hand it down to a younger woman at some point in her life when it's time to give it up. And so that woman picks up those number of years and carries them a number of years further. And so the age expands. The age grows. It's a deep play on a lot of levels because there is a subject to work on. The young man that comes pounding on the door at the beginning of the play with a tormented soul, wanting to see her, having heard that she can heal him. And eventually in the play, she does take him on a journey to a point inside himself where he can be healed. That journey is where she takes him is called a city of bones. It's a mystical city, which in fact, in reality, does exist. It's in the center of the Atlantic Ocean. When slave ships traveled from Africa to the United States by the hundreds, a number of them sank. They never made it, like a lot of ships on the ocean. A lot of those who were enslaved were thrown overboard or jumped overboard. So there's a lot of dead bodies in the Atlantic Ocean. And those bodies eventually become bones. And they carry a history of pain. Over 70, 80 million black people died during the Middle Passage years of slavery. That's a lot of people. So that city of bones has been transformed into a healing center for those with a troubled soul. And through a kind of a seance ritual, those troubled are guided, led by Aunt Esther, to that point where they can face off with those bones.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your own character, Solly Two Kings, who is really an amazing character?
Well, my character, I read it on paper like we all who initially started this play. And like any good writing, it conjures up visions in your mind's eye of who these people are, like reading a great novel. And coupled with the brilliant costume designs by August's wife, who did the costumes for this show, Constanza Romero, the vision just became so vivid in my mind. Here's a man years older than myself. He's a man in late 60s. He's a suitor to Aunt Esther. He's a man who, they have a sort of a nonverbal romance going on. He was a conductor on the Underground Railroad. What is the Underground Railroad? It was a trail from the southern states, where slavery was alive and well at that time, a trail that led from there all the way through the United States and out the upper end into Canada. And these railroad men and women were like guides. They would round up a group of slaves and lead them through the woods, the fields, the hills, and the valleys until they got them all the way north into Canada. And there's a lot of cities or townships up in Canada today. One that bore my grandfather, Buxton County in Windsor Province, Ontario Province, Windsor, near Windsor, 9 miles from Chatham. One of the oldest townships of the North. Well, anyway, my character, an Underground Railroad conductor, all through, he first of all, he escaped from slavery nearly 10 years before emancipation in the 1850s. And from that point on, he went back down south after he himself had escaped and continued to squire people out of the South into freedom in Canada. So he's thoroughly experienced in this. And these Underground Railroad men were like a guerrilla army, for the want of a better word. They were a force to be reckoned with against the injustices of that time. And their job was getting people out of the South, getting them out of slavery. So now, the time is 1904. He's a man in his late 60s. Slavery has ended 40 years previous. He's living in Pittsburgh, and he's taken up a trade, as it were, of selling dried dog droppings, This is the radio. This is
You call it pure in the play.
Dog manure. And he gave it a name called Pure. And he sells it to the local people in the community as fertilizer for their plants. And in some instances, used in perhaps casting spells or whatever. But the basic common practical use was fertilizing plants. So he has Alan Ester as a customer, and they have developed a relationship and beautiful romance, really. Beautiful romance. This man is a warrior. He may be 67, but he's just as keen a warrior as he was when he was 35. And he sees the injustices that still exist. At that time, they did, in Pittsburgh, which was a northern city, because of the steel mills that, in a sense, re-enslaved the men who got jobs in those steel mills, because they were ran by unscrupulous people who paid them very low wages and then had little schemes to keep them in debt to the steel mill, so that they felt like they made them think that they couldn't even quit the job, that they would be arrested for breaking some kind of verbal contract. So there was a lot of pain and suffering going on at a steel mill, and it's being absorbed by me to the point of threshold where I did something about it. I suggest seeing the play to find out. But I did something about it. And I also received a letter from my sister, who's still in the South, that she can't take it anymore down there, the way she's being treated. And she wants out. So from that letter, made a decision to go back down there and get her. So, you know, a couple of things that I have going on in the play. And it's just a wonderful experience. I saw the character as a bit of a swashbuckler, because of the fact that when he dies, the contrast from having seen him with such a bravado personality makes it all that much more painful. I love this play, and I just dive in the pool and try to get to the other side night to night to night to night, on the journey again and again. And each time I swim through, I absorb and discover new things. So it's a constant, never-ending classroom. And I'm so grateful to be paid for attending class on a day-to-day, sharing it with the audience. August Wilson is without question the Shakespeare of our time. You can stack him up against some of the older, more previous established playwrights like Eugene O'Neill, like Tennessee Williams, and you'll see in the fiber. You can discuss it. Here's a man that's gotten 40 or 50 honorary doctorates across the country, great universities. The men of high literature have bestowed that honor upon him worldwide. They respect this man. And here's a man that self-educated himself from age 15 in the city of Pittsburgh.
I have to say that when I finished watching the play, I felt more like writing a thesis than a review. So there's one more play to come in the canon, and then we reach 10. And what happens? Does August Wilson sort of go to sleep and die? Does he start another 10?
Young man, he's got 50 years ahead of him. No telling what he'll do. I heard rumor he's getting ready to do a big musical with Wynton Marsalis. He's got his one-man show that's developing. And there's the movies. I don't. You know, you'd have to ask him whether he wants to embrace Hollywood. But you know, he's got a lot of avenues he can go.
And do you think that it's possible that Gem of the Ocean might travel the oceans and come to London at some point? With you in, hopefully.
That would be wonderful. I heard a rumor that the Royal National and the South Bank that hosted us in with Jitney saw this and already put in a request.
Well, let's hope that that's the case. Anthony Chisholm, thank you so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. I'm very grateful.
I love London. And I love Gemini Ocean. And well, I hope one day that London will have an opportunity to love Gemini Ocean as well.
So do I. I think it would be richly deserved. Thank you very much indeed.